Okay, good morning, everyone. The Constitutional Rights, Rule of Law, and Government Operations Subcommittee meeting will now come to order. Lexi, please call the roll.
Chair Roach.
Present.
Representatives Bankson.
Here.
Brackett. Brennan.
Here.
Cross.
Here.
Edmonds. Jacques.
Here.
Joseph.
Here.
Lopez.
Here.
Lakin.
Here.
Porras.
Here.
Roth, excused. Trunau. Waldron.
Here.
Yarkovsky.
We have a quorum. Thank you, Lexi. Members and members of the audience, please remember to silence your cell phones. Today we have two presentations, one by the Department of Management Services and one by the Department of Financial Services. First up is Mr. Brandon Spencer. You can't go wrong with a name like Spencer, with the Department of Management Services. Mr. Spencer is the Director of State Purchasing and is the state's Chief Procurement Officer. A quick bio, before joining the department, he spent 21 years with the Florida Department of Transportation, where he held the position of State Purchasing Administrator. For today's presentation, Mr. Spencer is going to provide an overview of the state procurement and contracting process, as well as give the committee an update on the implementation of 2021 legislation relating to agency contracts for commodities and contractual services and technology procurement. Mr. Spencer, welcome to today's committee meeting. You're welcome to proceed, sir.
Good morning. My name is Brandon Spencer, Chief Procurement Officer for the State of Florida and the Division Director for the Division of State Purchasing for the Florida Department of Management Services. Thank you to the committee, to the Chair Roach, for the opportunity to speak to the work that the Department of Management Services does and our division does in the world of procurement. State Purchasing provides a wealth of knowledge and experience. Also, we provide a wide variety of goods and services for those that serve Florida. The department, today I'll be speaking on the department's implementation of the 2021 House Bill 1079 regarding agency contracts and commodities and contractual services, and 2021 House Bill 1137 regarding information technology. Before we begin, I'd like to give a quick overview of the Division of State Purchasing. We are made up of two procurement bureaus, one contract management bureau, and three program areas, including the department's e-procurement system, also known as My Florida Marketplace, the Office of Supplier Diversity, and the governance and training. Here are some quick facts about our division. The annual spend on the division's 70 managed contracts exceeds $2.3 billion in the fiscal year 22-23. Additionally, the department procured and manages 24 insurance contracts, insuring over $53 billion in tangible property. Division also manages My Florida Marketplace, which is used as the agencies to post competitive procurements, facilitate purchasing, and contract and sourcing events. This year, agencies issued over $5 billion in purchase orders through that system. The Florida Certified Contract Manager and Florida Certified Contract Negotiator programs are all housed within our governance and training team. There are currently over 5,100 active certifications, and we have certified more than 15,000 since the inception of that program. The first question you may ask are, what do the agencies procure? There's two major buckets in which we purchase: commodities and contracted services. For commodities, think about tangible property, tangible things that you may have. Contracted services, think of the services the agencies may need to fulfill their mission. The procurement of commodities range widely from items such as timber, aviation equipment, genetic analyzers. These are some examples of unique agency request. Contracted services include security services, python removal, aquatic plant harvesting, and a wide variety of other services that are tied to each agency's mission. The public procurement process in the state of Florida begins with a state term contract. Agencies defined in Chapter 287 of Florida statutes include all units and organizations of the executive branch of state government. This does not include the legislature, local governments, universities. However, all of these are eligible users, and they may use our contracts once they have been procured. State term contracts are contracts competitively procured by the Division of State Purchasing. State agencies are required to use those commodities and contractual services for those contracts. State term contracts are often awarded to multiple vendors and on a regional basis. This allows us to ensure that we've got adequate coverage and competition and also opportunities for smaller businesses and other businesses around the state to participate in these contracts. Agencies using these contracts must adhere to guidelines that are provided within that contract by the Division of State Purchasing or through our rule, Chapter 68. For those commodities and contractual services not available in state term contracts, agencies are able to use an alternate contract source. The department, pursuant to its authority in Chapter 287, canvasses and adopts contracts from any alternate contract source that may have been procured by another governmental entity or for the use by these agencies. The division negotiates with these vendors on terms that are favorable and pricing that is favorable to the conditions of the state of Florida. Once in place, agencies may also purchase from these, or those eligible users may also purchase from those contracts. If a commodity or contractual service is not available on a state term contract or on an agency contract, the agency may decide to use their own procurement. And procurement within the state of Florida is usually divided into two main areas. As a quick note, this presentation will discuss purchasing from Chapter 287 of Florida Statutes. There are other chapters within Florida Statutes that dictate some purchasing, such as 255, which is related to construction, 337, which is related to transportation infrastructure. But for the purpose of our discussion today, we'll focus on Chapter 287, specifically 057. A competitive solicitation is required for anything that is purchased above $35,000. The thresholds that is currently in Category 2, this is outlined in Chapter 287-017, and these were last updated in 2010. Purchase below this threshold can be made using good purchasing practices. This involves getting quotes, contacting the eligible vendors, and allowing them to provide informal process of getting quotes for prices under $35,000. The three methods of a competitive procurement in the state of Florida are outlined within Chapter 287, an invitation to bid, a request for proposal, and an invitation to negotiate. All competitive procurements require sealed bids, equal access to documents posted in the My Florida Marketplace Vendor Information Portal, and defined evaluation criteria, regardless of the method of procurement. An invitation to bid is often considered the most straightforward. This is where we look at price, price only, and determine the low bidder and issue the contract to that low bidder. A request for proposal contemplates price and the vendor's approach. By statute, request proposals are awarded to the vendor that is most advantageous to the state to use that contract. An invitation to negotiate, considered to be the most complex method of procurement. These are usually reserved for more complex purchases, more complex projects. And the process involves evaluating proposals and identifying the vendors that would represent the best value to the state of Florida. As you can see by the diagram, invitation to bid is far more used than any other. Based on data retrieved from the Vendor Information Portal and validated by the Florida Accountability Contract Tracking System, or FACTS, which you will hear about in the following presentation, we issued 893 ITBs in fiscal year 22-23. State agencies issued 236 RFPs and 141 ITNs. For 1,270 competitive solicitations across agencies within the state of Florida. Some purchase in excess of those Category 2 thresholds may take place without a competitive solicitation. We commonly refer to these as exempt purchases, and it's important to note that this competitive process may still be used if there are some of these exemptions, but regardless of whether exemption exists. These include emergency purchases, purchases from a single source, or purchases that are directed by law. Emergency purchases over $35,000 require declaration of emergency by the agency head, and those single source purchases require the agencies to follow additional steps outlined in Chapter 287 and must report the information to the Department of Management Services on a quarterly basis. Legislatively directed purchases do not require a report to DMS. However, the method of procurement is captured within My Florida Marketplace and the FACTS system. An example of one of these legislative directed would be a contract with Respect to Florida or Pride. In addition to these, there are a variety of other purchases that are exempt from competitive solicitation. They generally apply to services that are more difficult to competitively evaluate, such as health and human services, artistic services, etc. Again, though some of these purchases are competitively exempt, that does not necessarily mean that they are not competitively procured. Sometimes agencies will do so. 2 years ago, the 2021 legislative session resulted in a couple of laws related to procurement and contracting to the state of Florida. And you've asked me to report on our implementation of that here today. I would like to take this opportunity as the state's chief procurement officer to say thank you for increasing accountability and enhancing transparency to Florida. I would like to highlight the department's implementation of these requirements outlined in both of those bills. I'll refer to them as House Bill 1079, although those are in chapter of Florida statute. We use the term house bills for these as a term of art among agencies, and that's what we're accustomed to calling them. First, to begin, House Bill 1079 required the Secretary of Management Services to approve all of those alternate contract sources that were procured by other governmental entities. The department has since implemented a rule and adopted a smart sheet to automate this process. And rapid review of this process takes place on a weekly basis. Since 2021, agencies have requested and gotten approved 80 alternate contract sources to be used by those agencies. Next, the bill required agencies to request 25 quotes from vendors from state term contracts on contractual services. If there were fewer than 25 vendors, they were required to request quotes from each vendor that is on that contract. This is to ensure a second level of competition and a second level of competitiveness amongst the vendors that are on those contracts. Next, the bill required quarterly reporting of agencies, single source actions to the department. As I mentioned earlier, if an agency was entering into a single source, they're now required quarterly to report to the Department of Management Services. Based on the data that was submitted by the agency, last year's report of fiscal year 21-22 detailed 59 single source actions, resulting in $88 million in purchases. It should be noted that this year we are receiving the data and intend to report on a timely basis to the legislature as we're required to do so for that. House Bill 1079 also made quite a number of changes to the division's training offerings. To start, in addition to contract management duties being codified in law, the bill extended the length of certification for the Florida Contract Certified Negotiator from 4 years to 5 years. Beginning this year, all those certifications will have phased out the four-year term and now be active with five-year certifications. Additionally, the bill codified Florida Certified Contract Negotiator requirements into statute. In order to align with statute, the department updated the Rule 60A-1 of Florida Administrative Code, which houses that requirement for FCCM. This bill also required the department to create and implement a procurement for supervisors training for those that supervise contracts who oversee those that manage contracts in excess of $100,000 annually. This class is composed of five modules and launched in the People First Learning Management System in June of 2021. Agencies identified those individuals who were required to attend the training and either work with their own LMS system or administrator to assign the class, or DMS assign that class as needed. There are currently over 1,700 individuals that are assigned this training, and the course has enjoyed a 4.19 out of 5-star rating for the content of the course. Next, the two final updates related to implementation of House Bill 1079 related to suspended vendors and list oversight teams. Previously, Rule 60A contained procedures for corrective action plans for vendors that were in suspension. With creation of 287-1351, the department repealed this rule. In regard to contract oversight teams, the division has leveraged its training programs to disseminate information related to the requirements of these teams and many other topics discussed here today. And we have trained more than 3,000 individuals since the bill's implementation. Additionally, the division has routinely participated in these teams as the required other agency for any contract that was in excess of $20 million. The department has been successful in filling this role for the contracts managed by the Department of Lottery and is working with other departments to determine their needs and to make sure that we're able to fulfill their needs as those arise. Next, allow me to highlight the implementation of House Bill 1137. Two primary statutory changes related to 1137 relate to the obtaining a minimum number of quotes for certain contracts, defining the process, and pre-qualifying vendors for information technology staff augmentation services. Similar to the related language in House Bill 1079, House Bill 1137 required agencies to request 25 quotes from vendors on state term contracts for IT commodities and contractual services. If there were fewer than 25 vendors for such contract, all vendors must be contacted for a quote. Contracts that meet this requirement and a standard in my Florida marketplace are required by the system, requires the purchaser to select the appropriate number of vendors. If there are 25 vendors, then the system requires them to select 25 vendors that it will issue the quote to. The bill also required the department to pre-qualify vendors for IT staff augmentation services by October 1st, 2021, and continually every October 21st thereafter. The department has consistently met this obligation, and most recently, we qualified more than 400 vendors on September 29th of this year. As a side note, the three-year average spend on that contract is in excess of $130 million, and it currently ranks number two among all state term contracts in the usage. In summary, the department has been able to successfully implement all changes directed to both of these bills. But that does not mean that we have not faced still some challenges. Based on the division's role to provide guidance and policy related to procurement contracting in the state, DMS has received reports from agencies regarding challenges complying with these requirements. Agencies are reporting difficulty in recruiting and retaining contract managers and required experience managed contracts in excess of the $10 million threshold. Upon further investigation, DMS has found that during the fiscal year 22-23, we had approximately 125 more contracts that were in excess of the $10 million threshold than those that fall between the $5 million and $9.9 million threshold. Additionally, the vacancy rate for contract managers across the state sits around 17%, increasing the workload for existing agency contract managers. The department is actively working with these agencies to develop solutions to the challenges and related requirements, and increasing our efforts to develop contract managers in this area and to ensure that they have the adequate training and experience. As a final note, I would like to share the state purchasing mission with you: to empower and equip our customers to provide goods and services to the state of Florida. We constantly strive to be a pioneering workforce and to be seen as a trusted resource for all our agency customers. I challenge my staff on a daily basis with this statement. I not only want to lead the state of Florida or the United States in public procurement, but I want those around the world to wake up tomorrow morning and ask, what did Florida do and how did they solve this problem? We look forward to your continued support and guidance from this committee and the rest of the legislature. And I thank you again, Chair Roach, for your entire committee, and happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Spencer. Members of the committee, good morning again. Okay, we have hands up. All right. Representative Cross, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. I had a question about the minimum 25 quotes for the contract services for information technology. So can you kind of explain the rationale for why we had this legislative change and how implementation of this has improved procurement? It seems like a little bit onerous for the agency, so I'd like to just hear how implementation has been.
Chair recognized, sir.
Thank you. Excellent question. Going back traditionally with many of our contracts, there was not a minimum number of quotes that were required. The legislature saw fit to ensure that we were getting an adequate amount of competition. By requesting quotes, through previous rule requirement, if it was in excess of $35,000, you had to receive three quotes. Oftentimes, the reception of three quotes was not always guaranteed. We may request three quotes, not necessarily get one. That did not necessarily demonstrate competition. With the implementation of the 25, we've broadened the net. We've been able to cast out, ask for more quotes. It does not necessarily mean that, that the agencies are required to receive those quotes. And through the electronic process, through using the My Florida Marketplace system, we're able to send those out simultaneously. And there is no further obligation just than to just receive those quotes and determine what is the best value for the state of Florida moving forward.
Representative Banks, and you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. Just one question on procurements. Is our policy a Florida only, or are there ever times where we go outside of the state of Florida or even internationally for any procurements?
You're recognized.
Thank you, sir. Yes, we do go outside of the state of Florida. We are working with the legislature and with our agencies to focus and add preference to state of Florida companies. There is currently within statute a state of Florida preference for vendors that are providing commodities within the state of Florida, but that does not extend to services as of today.
Mm-hmm. Members. Ranking Member Joseph, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your presentation. In terms, you mentioned that there was a 17% vacancy rate for contract and grant managers. What has been the impact of that vacancy rate on the administration of contracts?
Recognized.
Thank you, sir. Great question. With that vacancy rate, we've actually just, many of the agencies are asking people to do more with less. It has impacted trying to get more individuals to spread the love, I guess you could say. We've implemented some interesting programs and some of the agencies have implemented some interesting assistance for that, such as developing associate contract managers. So they sit along with a larger contract manager that has that level experience, trying to get them trained up. We've also focused on providing more training for those, like I said, our FCCM training, getting more out there. The general impact is that we've been able to do it. It's just required some creative administrative processes and learn to do more with less.
Follow up.
You're recognized.
So separate from this staffing challenge, what are the biggest challenges you face in the contracts administration in general?
Recognized.
Thank you, sir. That's a good question. I think it varies. One of the largest challenges that we're facing, that we're seeing across the board, is getting the level of experience. It's not just staffing challenges, but getting a level of experience of contract managers. As I said before, we've got the threshold set currently at $10 million. But there's not that many contracts that are falling in the $5 to $9 million. So getting individuals accustomed to managing these large contracts, doing the proper follow-up, making sure that they have contracts with good financial accountability, financial consequences within, and getting accustomed to implementing that. We have found that over the past couple years, we've really done a really good job of improving that financial accountability to the vendors, not as a stick, not as something to come and punish the vendors at, but as a way to ensure that we have a project that is a good service. I've had a great working relationship with many of our vendors statewide over the years, and one thing that I know is that our vendors, just like our state agencies, they're looking for a good product. No one wants to give you a C product. Everyone wants to give you a product. So some of our challenges have been able to collaborate with them and make sure that we're getting the best we can for what we're asking.
Actually, one comment.
Please.
Thank you. So thank you for that. I would love to work with you to kind of help tackle that issue and get our workforce where it needs to be. I know for a lot of us, people reach out to us for all kinds of random concerns with agencies. And one that comes to mind as you're standing here is a woman from my district, a business owner who was awarded a state contract, but somehow in the contracts administration, the money got deposited into some other entity's account, and it was a significant amount of money, and yet they were trying to follow up with her for accounting about the funds, and she kept telling them she never got the funds. So I think we finally got it to a point where we can get to the bottom of that, but I want to make sure that kind of stuff doesn't happen.
Absolutely. Let us know. We'll be happy to work with you. We'll work with our friends, Mr. Mary, that you'll be hearing from shortly over at Department of Financial Services, and we can get to the bottom of that. Love it.
All right, sir, I have just a couple of questions I wanted to touch on. Members, beginning in October of 2021, we have required each agency inspector to complete a risk-based compliance audits of all contracts going back over the last 3 years. I would curious to know if the 2021 audit revealed any significant findings specifically in the area of vendor preference. Can you comment on that?
Yes, sir. Specifically, there were no significant findings in relation to that. As you said, the inspector generals were able to audit contracts across all other agencies. We found that took a good look at the procurement process to ensure that we were not showing favoritism to a particular vendor. That was the bigger concern, that someone gets in, gets embedded, never leaves. There were no significant findings in that relationship. In those findings, I am looking forward to seeing what the findings in the 2024 audit are coming from.
Okay, thank you. And then kind of a follow-up to that, when you're dealing with your contract managers, whether you're talking about the folks that are approving $10 million or more or something less than that, what kind of internal procedures do you have to vet those folks to ensure that there's no conflict of interest in either companies they own or their family members own or subsidiaries that they're involved with?
That's a great question. Conflict of interest is something that is on the forefront of what we deal with. Many of the agencies have their own procedures. We've delegated that authority to each agencies to develop conflict of interest policies. Most agencies have a conflict of interest certification that must be signed before taking the role of contract manager. Within the Department of Management Services and many others, we require the appointment of that contract manager to be vetted through senior management so that we're taking a look at their credentials, we're taking a look at their experience, and we're verifying that there is no possible implication of, like you said, managing contracts that are related to their family members or something they have a interest in the state of Florida.
And how do you do that? I mean, do they have to file or fill out a financial disclosure form, or how do you vet that?
Most positions are required to fill out a financial disclosure form with the Commission on Ethics. Also, there is a certification and attestation directly related to those contract managers. That actually, it's a multi-step. Many times, they are asked to fill out that certification of non-conflict prior to the procurement, and then on an annual basis when managing the contract.
Okay. And then just drilling down a little bit more, do you happen to know, I mean, how many times in your experience have you actually flagged a contract manager that has acted unethically, inappropriately, or did have some kind of financial interest and they were letting contracts to people for their own financial benefit? Does that happen with some regularity, or has it ever happened?
It has not happened with any regularity. From my current role in state purchasing, we do not get to that level. We empower the agencies to do that. We follow up with them. We ask them to report of any instances, and none of those have been reported in my tenure with state purchasing. To my knowledge, nothing in recent years related to those have been reported to us.
Okay, thank you. Just a couple more. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you a couple questions about suspended vendors. So, you know, obviously in the course of doing business, you're going to have contracts you let vendors you do business with do not perform. How aggressive is the state of Florida about pursuing legal action against those folks who fail to deliver for the citizens of Florida and are recouping those taxpayer dollars that you've spent? And then once they get on the suspended vendor list, are they able to get off the list? What does that process look like?
Honestly, historically, the state of Florida has not been very aggressive with that. Through our former rule and now in statute, there's requirements for agencies to report those vendors to the Department of Management Services, and we go through a process of suspending them, which they're afforded 110 rights where they may protest that suspension. That process has not allowed us to be as aggressive as I'd like, to be completely honest. We have a very short list of suspended vendors. Also, that process is not very graduated at this point. If I can say, it's akin to the death penalty. There's not much of a progressive punishment process. It's something we're certainly interested in refining. It's something we'd be glad to work with this committee or anyone that could help us with that. But at this point, it's not a very well-defined process. As far as the process of them coming off the suspended vendor list, there is not a prescribed method for which removing from that suspended vendor list.
Okay, and then the suspended vendors, are they suspended by company name or individual name? Like if it's a company, they can just go reincorporate by some other, you know, new bogus fictitious name and you know, incorporate again and come back? Or do you suspend them by individual, by the individual's name?
No, we suspend them by company. However, we do our due diligence to see if they're reorganizing. As with all our contract management, all our vendor management, we often try to get to the root of what's going on, whether it's a parent company or if it's a subsidiary. And that extends all the way down to corrective action plans that we put our vendors on to ensure that we're getting the correct entity with that action.
Okay. Thank you very much. And then I would just close with this. If there's anything you identified that this committee can do or this body can do to help you in that regard or any other to ensure that we're being the best stewards of Florida taxpayer dollars that we can. You know, my door is open, and I think that would be the same for any member of the committee. So let us know how we can help you if there's a way that we can do that. And, ranking member, you're recognized. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Some of these questions and the answers have awakened the litigator in me. So my question for you is, when you say haven't been aggressive, is that just in terms of litigation or in terms of punishment or in terms of accountability? What does that mean?
Recognized.
Thank you, sir. My apologies. I don't feel like we've been aggressive in going through the process. Our process at present is not in favor of an agency being able to do that. Now, there are protections there to protect the entities, so they are not falsely accused. They do not, you know, we're not in the business of putting companies out of business. But we have not been aggressive. State agencies have not been aggressive identifying poor performers and sending that up to the Department of Management Services so we can address it. Now, Department of Management Services, state purchasing, we manage over 800 vendors directly related to our state term contracts, but that's a drop in the bucket compared to the thousands of contracts that are managed by agencies. And agencies just aren't aggressive in identifying those poor performers and allowing us to pursue the process.
Recognize.
You also lamented about a progressive process for punishment and how that's lacking, and it's kind of like you go straight to the death penalty. Can you describe that process or what you would recommend would be a better process?
You're recognized, sir.
Yes, ma'am. I would love to have a further discussion about that. Usually our process now, when we have a vendor that's performing poorly within agencies or within state purchasing, we put them on a corrective action plan. Those corrective action plans are usually isolated to the particular entity in which they're doing work with and does not cross lines between agencies. So we don't identify that vendor A is not only struggling with the Department of Transportation, but they almost also may be struggling with Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles or the Department of Management Services, Department of Health. I would love to see a process in which we're evaluating them across the enterprise and making determinations of something a little less problematic as suspending the vendor, but, you know, suspending their ability to participate in new solicitations because they obviously sometimes this is related to cash flow and they need to continue the work, but we don't want them to expand their work. Also, a process that would allow us to evaluate vendors on a regular basis that have been struggling. They have identified and put sort of on a watch list so we can see what they are before they go to the point where they're suspended. A downstream effect of suspending vendors in the state of Florida is many other states look to us as a leader. So if we suspend a vendor within the state of Florida, we're not only affecting their ability to do business with the state of Florida, but across the United States. And we would like to be able to identify the underperformers, not necessarily the lack of performance, and be able to do something with that.
Last follow-up. What kinds of things would a company have to do to get them suspended under your current scheme?
The short answer is default on their contract. We've asked them to perform goods or services, provide them to us, and they're unable to do so. That's the short answer.
Thank you.
Mr. Spencer, thank you. I'd offer you an opportunity. Any closing comments you want to make?
No, I'd just like to thank the committee. Thank you, Chair Roach, for your time. Our office is always open. We'd love to partner and provide you any information. If there's something that is in the presentation that offers you a question or something you'd like to follow up with, please do not hesitate to reach out. We'll be glad to help.
Okay, thank you, sir. Members, I hope you found this educational. Mr. Spencer, thank you so much for answering all of our questions and for your time here today.
Thank you.
Members, next we're going to have a presentation by Mr. Mark Mary with the Department of Financial Services. By way of background, Mr. Mary has served as the Assistant Director for the Division of Accounting and Auditing within the department since May of 2017. Prior, he served as a Bureau Chief for the Bureau of Auditing for 11 years. He's responsible for managing the state's process for payments and payrolls and providing financial reporting to the state. This morning, he's going to provide an overview of the Florida Accountability Contract Tracking System, which is the website where state agencies post contract information. Mr. Mary, good morning, sir. Thank you. You are recognized to proceed.
Thank you, Chairman. It seems like I have been with state government now for almost 33 years, and I've served in the capacity of accounting, financial reporting, and auditing the whole time. So I've seen a lot of good change over the years. As a matter of fact, I can remember back to the prehistoric days of lots and lots of paper, and now, you know, everything is digital. So I've spent a lot of time, you know, I tell people that and they don't believe me. But if you go out to our website, myfloridacfo.com, we have the main page, there's a lot of good information on pertaining to state government there. And one of it is the Transparency Florida. The other is facts. And that's what I'm going to be speaking today about. I can remember prior to facts. Facts came about in 2011, and I can remember prior to facts, the visibility on contracts and grants was almost non-existent to the public. Contracts and grant agreements were housed in different systems, in different agencies, and so Department of Health had theirs, DOT had theirs. They were all unique to their programs. There was My Florida Marketplace then, but there wasn't a lot of visibility. And so in 2011, the Transparency Florida Act amended Section 215.985. And it allowed the CFO to maintain a secured contracts tracking system for the public. We implemented that in fall of 2011. And the law required that within 30 days of contract execution, state agencies were to put their contracts on the website. And this included two-party written agreements. These included grant agreements, and the grant agreements have two sides to them. The grant agreements have the expenditure side and a revenue side if we are entering into an agreement with a federal cognizant agency. So state of Florida pulls money down from different federal, like Health and Human Services, And then we spend that money or we pass it down to subrecipients. So all of these had to go on the web. I'll tell you something else too. Before implementing FACTS, we didn't have a centralized system that connected payments to contracts. So I had contract and payment auditors having to get documents from different agencies and audit those payments in accordance with the contracts. And so there wasn't a connection out there. And FACTS, because you put your contract out there and you make payments, it has to be correlated to FLAIR. So every contract has to be correlated to FLAIR if you're making payments on that. So that's a that was another big benefit for FACS. In addition to the contract documents, the PDF versions, we have to have certain data elements because we're running statistics and doing measurements consistently. So we have to have the contracting parties, beginning and ending dates of the contract, total compensation under the agreement, and all payments made to date, the cumulative amount of payments, procurement method used, whether it's a sole source or whether it's an exempt or whether it's competitive, and any amendments that take place on that contract. We had another revision to Section 215.985 in 2013, and this pertained to confidential information and public records requests. What was happening was all of a sudden we became the repository of contracts, associated contract payments, and so entities or people would contact us for public records. We made the contract open to the public, and then at the same time, sometimes the public is asking us for a copy of the contract. So it was kind of quirky. So the law was amended to provide the responsibilities to the state agencies for their contracts. So if any subpoenas or public records requests were to come in, they would go to the respective agency. The second part to that is signatures. You know, people sign contracts, and this allowed the redaction of signatures on contract documents because, as you know, bad people copy somebody's signature and they use it. And so a lot of people don't want their signatures out there. This law also was amended to allow the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services and the Department of Legal Affairs to have their own transparency sites related to contracts. So if you want to see their contracts, you would have to go to their sites. Just recently, the statute was amended again, and this pertained to a section, a little section, it's called 216.1366, and this pertains to nonprofit corporations that receive state or federal financial assistance, and officers of that corporation or board members, officers, executive management, board members, they have to post their compensation, their total compensation, including total annual leave payouts, their benefits. Everything has to be posted in FACS now pertaining to the, because as you know, some of these officers are receiving state funds and they're working at one corporation and that corporation's embedded within that corporation. And there's this tiered down approach to compensation. So that's a requirement, a new requirement for this year. We do an executive summary every week, and this is just a recap of the current contracts to date. And as you see, we have 92,000 contract two-party written agreement documents. We have 9,000 revenue agreements with the feds out there. And then we have grant disbursements of 70,000. My Florida Marketplace provides a feed to us of their POs every week, and so the transparency site gets an update of the purchase order information and associated payments. I'm going to walk you through. This is looks like I've come to the page. This is, I'm going to have to pull this down a little bit to make this work. I'm going to walk through some examples of FACS for you. And keep in mind, just like anything else, it's a search, it has search engine capability. You have basic search, you have advanced search, depending on, and all the fields are open. So whatever information you know, you can narrow down your search. And so I've gone to the internet. So I'm in Facts Live, and I'll tell you something else too. We get 40,000 hits on this a day, which is 280,000 a week. Don't ask me how much it is in 1 year, but it's we get a lot of hits on this. So somebody's looking at this stuff out there. A lot of people are looking at this stuff, and because they're curious and they want to know what's going on in our government related to contracts and grants and what we're spending the money on. Okay, so I'm in the live environment. We have an FAQ page, and all it does is it just gives you some basic questions and answers as to the functionality, and I won't get into all of them, but it's informative about the site. Now, I hope I don't get out of this. Okay. What I like, I'm a visual person. I like graphs and charts and all this. We have a charts page. If you go to that, it has a bunch of cool stuff. Like number of active contracts for the top five agencies out there. And you guys would probably guess that DOT has a lot of contracts because they do a lot of mapping, road construction, road maintenance. And so you can see that they have over 11,000 contracts. Division of Emergency Management, because of the hurricanes and all, they have contracts for the debris cleanup and things like that. So an interesting page. We can look at the number of contracts by type. We see that 28,000 are grant disbursement agreements, federal and state financial assistance. Then we have standard two-party written agreements out there. That's the next largest group. Procurement, method of procurement. Brandon was speaking about that earlier, the three different types. We can see that most of our contracts are competitively procured. We do have the exemptions, and you can see that. Now, I can go to that circle, and I can pull up the exemptions. I can show you the detail. Okay, what's exempt out there? And we have the contracts and the associated dollar amounts related to those contracts. So very, very informative, a lot of cool stuff. Let's see. Let's go down to purchase orders here. Purchase orders by procurement method. Okay. Looks like about a 50-50. We have competitive, and then we have, and the exempt. Okay. And then if I wanted to look at the exempt, I can click on that, and I can get the detail of it. And so some cool stuff. Now I'm going to go to the main search page, and you can search by agencies out there. And let's just pull up, I'll just pull up Department of Environmental Protection. Whoops. I'm used to having a mouse. It's pretty responsive. It'll take a second. Let's see. Okay. What do we have for Department of Environmental Protection? And I just did a random search. These are revenue agreements. And you can see we have one like for the Department of Environmental Protection, U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, and these are agreements. Yeah, so you can see letters of credit, cost sharing, associated agreements, and documents. And if I were to pull up a document, you would see a PDF, and I can go back to the original PDF, and I can open And that's the agreement with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency for us to receive federal dollars to do environmental stuff. Okay. Let's see. Go backwards here. Okay. Go back to the main page. Oh, let's why don't we just enter in let's enter in a healthcare provider, a big healthcare provider for the state. Caremark. You can see they have a $618 million agreement with the Agency for Healthcare Administration. And this is all part of the Medicaid program. So you can see how these agreements, these contracts are fitting in with our state and federal programs for funding sources.
Members, anyone have a name they want to plug in and look up publicly here while we're in committee? Serious question. No takers? Okay. All right.
And you can get more specific. If you know every contract and grant has to have an ID on it by agency. And if they don't, they don't get paid. You know, so we've got it all correlated. And so if you knew the grant number or the contract number, we can look it up by that. We can also put in a dollar amounts here. If I wanted to look at Department of Health and say I wanted to look at anything over $5 million. Oh, I put it in the date. Bifocals don't work real well up here. Let's see. Let's see over here. Okay. And so you can narrow down your search. You can slice and dice it, come in from different directions on it. And so this is going to give me everything $5 million or greater. And you can see now here, these are federal project grants, too, and you can see they're coming in from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. But we can look up purchase orders out there. We can look up small dollar. That's what you're going to see a lot with the commodities and small dollar contractual services. You're going to see a lot of purchase orders and the associated payments. These are just extra slides I put in case the internet wasn't working. So, but it's always better to go through a live presentation on it, in the charts, in the graphs, and this is our transparency page.
Thank you, Mr. Mary. Members, questions? Representative Brackett, you're recognized for question. No. Okay. Ranking Member, you're recognized.
Thank you. You had mentioned that there was a 30-day reporting requirement. What happens if the agency doesn't report the contract in 30 days?
You're recognized, sir.
They won't be able to make payment on it. You know, there's a correlation between contract IDs, the contracts, and the payment. So, and we're also doing contract and payment audits, too. We have a pretty robust team that's what they do all day long, is they pull these contracts, these grants up, and then they audit the deliverables. They look at the payments associated with those deliverables, and sometimes there's a little bit of back and forth with the agencies out there, you know, saying, hey, you know, you don't have a good deliverable here, or this payment, we don't know what this payment is for. How does this payment tie into the contract? So that's what these auditors do all day long. So we're kind of, we got the front end and we got the audit. And this is where that would get caught, is in the audit side of things.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Recognize.
Thank you. And you mentioned the payment. That wasn't where I was going to go with it. But as I mentioned earlier, there was a constituent that reached out. She was awarded an agency grant, and then it got paid to somebody else altogether. But then they wanted they weren't talking to each other. And as much as she kept telling them that, they were asking for accountability measures and reporting stuff from her for funds that she never received. So who would be the best person to help kind of streamline that?
You recognize.
The agency should make every, that's clearly an error. Mm-hmm. And they should make every attempt to correct that error. Now, I will tell you this. We have a team, we're probably down to maybe 35 auditors now, and we're looking at about 2.5 million payments. And so we can't see, and we have an audit plan with a strategy to look at certain things, but we can't look at everything. The volume is just tremendous. But that clearly is an error, and that clearly should have been corrected quickly.
Okay, follow up, Mr. Chair.
You're recognized, sir.
You had mentioned that there's a new required disclosure for nonprofits to share the entire compensation of their executives. Is there a similar, or does this requirement also apply to private companies?
You recognize.
It does not. It does not. Remember, private corporations are entitled, they're capitalists. They're entitled to make a profit. Now, in the procurement, you know, you're competing on price and quality and things like this. But for-profit corporations, we don't really care how much their officers get paid. However, when you look at state and federal financial assistance that is awarded or sub-awarded to nonprofit corporations, we are basically taking a block of money and we're putting it in their bank account, and they're using that money to operate on. And they're usually running programs on behalf of the state. So the as far as part of the cost of their operations, the state would have an interest in how much people are making. As a matter of fact, they should do a cost analysis on day one when entering into these types of agreements.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
You're recognized.
Thank you. So if a private company was administering a contract or providing a service for the public, wouldn't your rationale also apply to them?
You're recognized, sir.
Remember, the nonprofits are operating in a fiduciary capacity. They are managing and running a program on behalf of the state. We're purchasing goods or services from a for-profit. So like at DOT, if a road contractor came in and was building a road, as long as you have competition on the procurement, that's where the check is. We don't really care how much the officers of the road corporation make, because we competitively procured that contract, and they're in the business. They're in the business of building roads. So they're not running a program. The state of Florida is basically buying a road.
Follow up.
You recognize?
Thank you. But what if they are running a program and not buying a road or providing or a specific widget, right? Like, let's say it's a health service or a food assistance service or something where the expectation is tantamount to something a nonprofit could provide, but it's not. Or it's something that the state normally would provide in its public capacity, but because of outsourcing, we have outsourced out that particular service. Would that not apply in that instance?
You recognize, sir.
Under federal grant law, all of your for-profit corporations are considered contractors and are not running programs. In order to run a program, you actually have to be performing programmatic services like eligibility. There's a whole bunch of, depending on the type of program, requirements. And so if they're performing programmatic functions and receiving dollars, then they are considered a program. But the feds have defined all for-profit corporations as contractors. We're strictly procuring services, and they are not in the business of performing programmatic determinations.
One last question.
You're recognized.
Thank you. Earlier in the slide presentation, I think it was like the second or third page, you had a couple little bubbles of things that comes out of the CFO's office. And one of them was a scam tracker, and another was IRS harassment. Can you elaborate on those two things?
Recognize.
I cannot. I haven't even looked at them.
Okay, so you didn't put together the presentation.
No, I did put together the presentation.
And, okay.
But that's, I don't know what the IRS tracker
okay.
is.
All right. Thank you.
Members, further questions? Mr. Mary, I want to thank you. And, you know, I was playing with the website a little bit last night. It's really just breathtaking, the scope and the depth of information that you can find on the website. And I just had one question. For those folks that are seeking to, you know, identify short and long-term trends in Florida procurement, how long is the information retained on the website? How far can a member of the public expect to go back and find those PDFs that you showed us? Is it?
We started putting the PDFs on there in fall of 2011. And however, some of those contracts had already been in progress. So you will see some contracts that go back to 2010 or 20 or 2009 on there because they were already in progress when the law came about. So most of them are going to be 2011 and greater. And a lot of these contracts, they get renewed every year or two or three or so forth. So you can see the different ones over the year. Now, I will say this. We are contemplating keeping just 10 years and doing an archive of everything older. We haven't made a decision on it yet. And the reason why is because the more information you get, it starts to slow the search engine down.
Sir, thank you for your time and for sharing the information with the committee this morning. I'll offer you any closing comments, anything else that you would like this body or this house to be aware of?
No, I'm good. Thank you very much. And it's been a privilege to speak to you guys today.
Okay, thank you, sir. Appreciate your time.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, members, I'd like to thank Mr. Spencer and Mr. Mary on behalf of the committee. We appreciate you taking the time to educate this committee on the functions of your office and what you service you provide to the public. Members, this concludes our committee agenda. Seeing no further business before the committee, Representative Brackett moves we rise. Without objection, this meeting is adjourned.